My Cricket Coach Show, and you can find us at pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchley from the UK.
And this is Kevin Sampath from Australia. Well, as we're winding down the season here in Australia, the English season, I'm sure, is starting up soon, and everyone's waiting for the much-awaited Ashes, with Australia gaining form and England not so much there. Is that right, David?
Oh, don't talk to me about that. We're recording this just after the 2020 international against the West Indies, and we got soundly beaten. We're terrible at 2020 cricket for some reason. I don't know why, because we play more than anyone else in the world. yeah, we're not very good at it, and the West Indies are pretty good at it by the looks of it. So they could be a bit of a dark horse for the 2020 World Cup. Because they look very strong in 2020 cricket, but yeah,
that's right.
I'm a bit worried about the Ashes. I'm secretly don't want to tell anybody, but I'm a bit secretly worried that we're not going to do very well this year.
Well, let's hope it stays that way and Australia reclaims, well, brings it back, really.
Retains them, yeah, it retains them. The one thing about the Ashes, as an Englishman, the one thing about the Ashes that you get to hold on to is that the Australians never get to take the Ashes home. Whether you win them or not, they stay in London, in Lords.
Going to have to talk to the people of MCC or something.
Yeah, they did talk about it, didn't they? They did talk about moving them to Australia at one point. I think Australia were winning every time without many problems. I think there was talk about moving them.
Yeah.
But it's decided that it's probably unsafe to move that little urn too far, because it probably crumbled to dust as soon as anyone touches it.
Yeah. How's your week been?
Not so bad, actually. Yeah, the weather's made a turn for the better. So we've got spring in the air, and we've stepped up our training. Every training session now we're doing is a little bit more intensity, which is good. You know, we're playing, you know, up towards the start of the season, which is good to see. And I made a few changes to my fitness training, and I'm trying out this new idea of a power circuit, because normally what I do for power training is Olympic lifts, specifically the clean, because that's an exercise that, you know, that has seen me well over the years. But I just thought, for a bit of variation, try something else. So I'll come up with this power circuit. Well, I've borrowed it from somebody else, to be honest with you. So how that works is so instead of doing your normal sort of three sets of five on the clean or whatever it is, you do a circuit of exercises with a medicine ball. And they are so you just do one exercise after another. You do them all in a row, then you rest for about a minute, and then you do them again. And you do that three times, and that sort of covers sort of upper body and lower body power training. And the way I do that is I do some sort of overhead throw, you know, like an overhead smash, you know, where they hold the ball behind your head, and it's if you're doing a football or a soccer throw in, except you throw it down at your feet. And it bounces up, you catch it, and you throw it. Yeah, and then I do find a wall and throw the ball against a wall, like a side pass, and do that on each side. Do that an equal number on each side.
Yeah.
Then I do a chest pass, which is hold the ball level with your chest. You throw it against the wall, and it bounces back, and you catch it, and you throw it against the wall again. Then you put the ball down, and you do something like jump squats. You just stand in place, hands down by your sides, or possibly with your fingers locked behind your head, and jump squats, because that generates power in the hips. So, and that's where a lot of power comes from in terms of batting and bowling. So, I mean, I don't do any bowling, but you know, it all works together. So you're working the upper body and the lower body all in one circuit, and it takes slightly less time than doing the Olympic lifts, because the Olympic lifts need quite a lot of rest between sets. You know, you need at least 2 minutes, maybe three, maybe even 4 minutes between sets. Whereas this, you can get it all done in 5 minutes, so it's quite good. So I'm quite enjoying that. And hopefully, it's going to make a difference to my power.
Yeah.
We were just talking about power off the air, weren't we? Before we started, we were just talking about, because you've watched a few of the Women's World Cup games in your week, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I've been amazed at how similar their skill and technique is to the men's game. And if there's anything that differentiates between both games, it's just the power. But yeah, generally the skill level has been really high, and I've been really impressed. I'm clearly
Excellent.
a fan.
Well, what it shows me is it shows what I think anyway is watching a few games on the telly is that there's a couple of interesting things to take note. One is that strength and power is an important aspect of cricket. Because really, when you say there that the skill levels are the same, it's really only the power and the strength levels which are different. Because the average woman is physically not as strong as the average man, and that goes up to international cricket level as well. Then it shows that how important power is in cricket. So a lot of people say, well, strength and power has no place. You just need to look at the women's game to see that it does have a place.
Yeah, that's right.
But I mean, it also shows me what standards can be attained if you put in the work. So it doesn't matter how strong and powerful you are really. If you do put in the time to develop your skill as well, then you're gonna you can reach a high level.
Yeah.
So it's good to say. How many games have you been to?
I've been to two so far, and I'll probably go to two more in the weekend coming up, which is probably going to be third versus fourth, which is probably going to be Australia versus India and the World Cup final, which, ashamedly, I'll be saying I'll be going for England.
Well, yes, England's women do hold the Ashes, and they are the champions. So
Yeah, that's right.
I'm sure they'll win this World Cup. I've got every confidence in them, and at least the ladies are doing the job that the men are struggling to do at the moment.
Yeah, that's right.
The other thing I wanted to quickly mention before we make a start on the questions is Twitter, because Twitter's all over the place at the moment. I don't know if it's the same where you are, but Twitter seems to have exploded over here, and everyone's got a Twitter account, and everyone's twittering and tweeting and whatever it is that you call it. Have you noticed a big surge of twittering where you are?
People have started talking about it, but there's still a lot of people not knowing what it's about, so I'm sure the craze will pick up soon here.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've had a lot of sort of big name people over here, like celebrities in the UK who've picked up on it. People like Stephen Fry and Chris Moyles, who's a DJ on Radio 1 here, and TV presenters and all kinds of people, comedians, all kinds of people have picked up on it and started using it, and that sort of grown its popularity here. So I mean, we've been using Twitter. We have a My Coach account, a My Cricket Coach account for Twitter, and we've had that for a while. We've had it. We've had the. I had the account for a couple of years and not really used it, but I've started to use it a lot more now. And in the last few months, I've seen our number of followers. Because if you're not familiar with the way Twitter works, when you join up to Twitter, you start following other people to see what they're talking about. And the number of followers recently has jumped up from a few hundred, it was a couple of months ago, to over 9,000. So if you're on the sort of Twitter bandwagon, if you're joining in and want to know what it's all about, it does take a little bit of picking up. But if you're on the Twitter bandwagon, you want someone to follow, then head over to twitter.com/mycoach. Because I'm updating that quite regularly now and communicating with people through that, and I find it really a really useful tool to get a feel for what people are saying about cricket and just sort of stuff in general, because it's so random sometimes. That's what makes it good fun. You just follow people almost at random, people you might think you might be interested in, see what they're saying, and you can join in the conversation on what they're saying, or you can start your own conversations. And the good thing about it is that not like say blogging, for example, where you can write as much as you like. With Twitter, you only get 140 characters, so you've got to be succinct and to the point. So it makes it A quite hard to get your point across in 140 characters, and B quite interesting. You know, you can get through a lot of what people say very, very quickly, you know, because you only have 140 characters. So no one's going to be droning on about in great detail about things. They're just going to say something quickly and then move on to the next thing. So it's good fun. So if you're on Twitter, then come along and follow us. And if you're not on Twitter, give it a go. At least you've got one person to start following, who's me, and then we can go from there. You're not on Twitter, are you, Kev?
Yeah, I'll definitely check it out. No, I should go check it out soon, right after this.
Yeah, get yourself an account and sign up and have a little go at it. It does take a bit of getting used to. You have to follow a few people and get a few people following you. And when you get into it, when you get the hang of it, it does become a bit addictive. So you've got to be careful. You could waste many hours Twittering or reading other people's Twitters.
Yeah, I'll be careful. All right, David, I think it's time we get into the questions.
Sure.
Welcome to the question section of the My Cricket Coach Show. Our first question is from Viv, and he asks, I'm experiencing lower back pain from 6 months. Which exercise should I follow? Moreover, I'm a left arm spinner, and I wanted to change my action. Please help. David, bowling back pain problems, I can only think of one thing, and that could it be from a mixed action? As in his top half of the body turns one way and his bottom half turns from the other way? Or is it different for a spinner?
It's not as much of an issue for a spinner because you're not hairing in and trying to get through your action as quickly as possible. Yeah. So you don't. It's with spinners. It tends to be more shoulder issues rather than lower back issues. But you can still get it if you've got a mixed action. If it's you can a force of torque on your back is still a force of torque on your back. So if you're not correctly aligned, then yes, you can have problems there. So the first thing I would look at there is the bowling action itself.
Yeah.
Now, he mentions there that he wants to change his action, but he doesn't say why or how or what's wrong with his current action or anything like that. So we're going to have to, I'm afraid we're going to have to ignore that part of the question because he hasn't given enough detail there, unfortunately. But there are some general things that he can do if he's got a problem with a lower back and it's not necessarily his action. The first thing I'd say is that generally in life, most people in life tend to spend time sitting down. You know, you sit down when you're at work, at school. You sit down when you're driving to work, and you sit down when you get home and watch television or play on the computer or whatever.
Yeah.
So the first thing that does two things. It weakens your muscles around your hips and around your core because you're sitting down all the time. And it shortens the muscles at the front of your legs, the hip flexor muscles, the muscles that are responsible for lifting your knee up in the air. If you imagine standing up and then standing on one leg, lifting your knee up in the air, that's your hip flexor muscle flexing your hip. So it overactivates them because they're all the time, they're shortened and tightened. And the glute muscles at the back, your bum muscles and your hamstring muscles aren't doing anything because they're relaxed. So that's an imbalance there. And if you do that for long enough, that imbalance can cause your back to compensate for that, your low back to compensate for that weakness. And it can cause pain over time. So the two ways to get out of that is one is to stretch your hip flexors, stretch your hips as much as you possibly can and more than just, if you go to the gym and then you do a quick stretch for 30 seconds at the end, you probably want to do more stretching than that. You probably want to do stretching for sort of 5-10 minutes, a range of different stretches a couple of times a day just to keep the hips flexible and keep the range of motion in them and do the opposite of what you're doing all the rest of the day, which is sitting down. And the other thing you can do is strengthen up the muscles, the glute muscles. Get your bum nice and firm, basically, and And the way you can do that is by doing sort of exercises in the gym where you're working on the posterior train, the back, that the glute muscles and the hamstring muscles.
What would you say to the deadlift exercise, which I've heard many people speak wonders about, which really strengthens the lower back? But I've heard also if it's done incorrectly, it can really damage your lower back.
Well, the deadlift is an excellent exercise. It doesn't strengthen the lower back as such. What it does is it strengthens the glute muscles, hamstring muscles, your core muscles, and to a certain extent, you know, the lats and the back of your upper body as well, because you're having to lift up a big weight off the floor.
Yeah.
So it's an excellent it's a really, really excellent exercise. But if you do it wrong, then and you bend your back as you're picking up the weight or lowering it back down again, then yeah, because the deadlift requires you to lift a relatively large amount of weight, you can cause yourself more problems.
Yeah.
So I would recommend the deadlift to everybody, but the trick is to find a variation of the deadlift that works best for you. So you might be the straight bar deadlift, for example, is as long as you do it with good technique, is absolutely fine. But you need to do it with good technique, and you probably need someone to coach you on how to do that before you can start doing it with a decent amount of weight. And of course, the principle of overload is you're always trying to add weight to the bar to keep progressing and keep getting stronger. But the more weight you add, the more likely you are to lose technique. So, you know, you need someone to help you out with that and make sure your back doesn't round as you're picking up the bar. A good way to get around that is to use deadlift variations. Yep. So you can use single leg deadlifts, which obviously you have much less weight, and they're actually safer because it's a lot harder to round your back with a single leg deadlift. You tend to just fall over. You can do trap bar deadlifts, which is a good one as well. The trap bar is, I don't know if you've seen one of those in the gym, but the trap bar is that bar with a hexagonal bit. Instead of it being a straight bar, it's got sort of a hexagonal bit in the middle of it where you can stand in it, put the weight on either side of the bar, and then pick up the weight from standing in the middle. So it's like a straight bar deadlift, but you don't have the bit in the middle, so you can pick up the weight straight. So that automatically corrects form. So that's another way of doing it. And you can also do deadlifts with cable machines and things like that. So there are ways to do it, even if you're a complete beginner, to get the movement in there, which is probably more important than the actual way of doing it. You know, whether it's a straight bar, a trap bar, or whatever. You know, the movement is the important part, and then gradually adding weight once you've mastered the movement. So an excellent exercise for that, as long as you know how to do it safely, and always warm up first.
Yeah. So stretching is really key here in this situation.
Stretching those muscles around the hips, not necessarily the hamstrings. Stretching the hamstrings feels good, but your hamstrings are generally not the area that needs stretching. With hamstrings, they tend to be not strong enough rather than not flexible enough. So you need to strengthen the hamstrings. And then stretch the muscles at the front of your leg, your hip flexors, and the muscles that stretch the joints around the hips and get them nice and mobile. As part of a warm up, you can do that, or with stretching, you probably want to do it either outside of the gym or as part of a cool down afterwards.
All right, our next question is from Trita, and he asks, "I'm 20 and a right-handed medium pacer with a decent pace and line of length, but I'm unhappy with my action since it is a wrong-footed action like the Pakistani pace bowler Sohail Tanwi. Most people say that it's an advantage to have a wrong-footed action, but some people also say that it's not good since it's harder to get good pace. Please help me. Should I change my action or stay with it?" Now, David, I've heard batsmen who face Sohail Tanwi say that it's just the reason he gets so many wickets is because it's really distracting and they don't know. They're not used to when he's going to release the ball. Is that right?
Yeah, it takes a bit of... If you've ever faced a bowler who bowls off the wrong foot or a bowler with any kind of slightly unusual action. It does take a bit of getting used to because it's not what you expect. Someone with a slingy action or someone releasing the ball at a different point from what you're expecting, that's going to put you off to a certain extent. I mean, it doesn't take long to adapt, but just that initial kind of, whoa, what's going on here? You might not be too sure of yourself. So, yeah, there is the advantage there. You've got the surprise effect, if you like. Biomechanically, you are at a slight disadvantage in that you can't generate as much pace as you could if you had a action where you bowled off the front foot. But you can still generate quite a lot of pace. Mike Proctor was famously bowled off the wrong foot, and he was pretty sharp. So you can bowl fast off the wrong foot. It's just a slight... It shouldn't make any difference. Really, the only thing I would say is that, you know, does it work for you or not? I mean, do you bowl well with that action? Because if you do, then I shouldn't worry about it too much. If you're not bowling well with that action, then, yeah, maybe it's time to think about changing it. But the problem with changing your action dramatic like that, so you bowl off the right foot, is that it takes a long time to get right. It takes a lot of remedial work to get right. You can't just go, right, I'm going to bowl off the right foot now. I'm going to just make a slight adjustment and bang, everything's perfect. You have to you have to reprogram your brain, because your brain is used to a certain feel. You have to go back to square one. You have to go back to when you were learning how to bowl for the first time, when you were 7, 8, 9, 10, however old you were when you were first learning how to bowl. Literally from square one, and then work gradually from doing it in front of the mirror to doing it while holding a ball but not bowling it, then to bowling a ball from a standing position, then to walking through, then to jogging through, then to running through. And even then, you know, it's going to be a long time before you're putting the ball on a good line and length.
Can bowling off the wrong foot cause injury, David?
No, I've not seen any evidence to suggest that. As long as your hips and your shoulders are aligned correctly, as we were mentioning before, then I can't see how it's going to cause a problem. So I don't think he's worried about that. I mean, if he's finding he is getting a lot of injuries, and they're stress-related injuries or, you know, impact-related injuries, then perhaps he should have a look at that.
Yeah.
I would say my first answer would be don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Only worry about it if it's causing a major problem. And then if it's causing a major problem, then work with a coach and do some big remedial work.
Yeah.
You can actually... if you do want to go down that road, if anyone wants to go down that road of changing their action from scratch, then I do recommend Ian Pont's How to Bowl Faster course on the Pitch Vision Academy.
Yeah.
The reason why that is it has a section on if you want to remodel your action, it has a section on how you can do that, which is quite interesting. And you can also use that if you're coaching young players and they're learning the action for the first time. You can use the same techniques as you can if you're remodeling someone else's action. The good thing about kids learning for the first time is that they're a blank sheet of paper and you can teach them anything you like. Yeah. With someone doing remedial work, that's a bit more complicated because you've got to reset the memory and then load it up again with the correct information, which is a bit more difficult.
Yeah. He has said, David, that he's been trying to change his action for a year, so maybe he should give Ian Pont's course a go.
Yeah, definitely, especially if you haven't got access to a decent coach, because a bad coach who doesn't really know what they're doing can make things worse.
Yeah.
Whereas someone like Ian Pont, who's remodeled many, many actions and also taught many children how to bowl from scratch as well, has, you know, he's got the secrets, he's got the answers there. So if you're doing it on your own, then definitely pick up that course.
Yeah. Our next question is from Mohan. And he asks for mental practice drills to prepare for long innings while batting for 2-day test matches. And he also asks for some hand and eye coordination drills. Now, I understand there's a mental strength training course in Pitch Vision Academy, David, created by you.
Created by me, yeah, exactly, yeah. So that would be a good place to look. Especially in terms of batting, because the thing with batting is that, you know, you can be out there for a long time, especially if you're playing 2-day cricket, then you can be out there for quite a long time. So your ability to concentrate and play a long innings is very much in the head. So,
yeah.
So I would say take a look at that course. I mean, the areas on that course that would be most interesting would be the third chapter, improving concentration, because that really what that really does is it discusses how you can how you need to adjust your level of concentration depending on what you're doing, because you've only got a certain amount of it. You can't concentrate with full force all the time. So how you can move between those levels smoothly, and then also how you can improve those skills of concentration and become more intensely concentrated when you need to. The other thing that might be quite interesting is if you're planning on playing long innings, then you might want to sort of visualize those innings before you play them. And again, there's a section on visualization in the mental training course on Pitch Vision Academy that sort of goes through how you can not only visualize success and how that can help you, but also how you can take the negative thoughts out of your mind as well, which is what upsets a lot of people's concentration, is if they do something wrong, they make a mistake, and then they think, oh well, you know, I'm playing badly today, and then because they think that, they get out. So how to deal with the negative thoughts as well as how to generate the positive thoughts is in there as well. So I would definitely look at visualization for long innings, and I would definitely look at concentration for long innings.
Yeah. I was watching an interview with Sehwag, I think, David, and the interview asked Sehwag how he keeps his concentration despite being an aggressive batsman. Yeah. And he said that he practices zoning in and out between each delivery. And he says that after each ball, he sings a song to himself or keeps himself away from the game until the next ball, so he can really concentrate on the next ball as a new ball. What do you say about tips like that?
That's brilliant. I mean, it works for him, and it's worked for a lot of other people as well.
Yeah.
I'd say that's probably a sort of quick summary of what he actually really does.
Yeah.
Because what you find is the top players, rather than it being a switch.
Yeah.
You know, so you switch off, think about something else.
Yeah.
Then switch on and play a brilliant shot. You know, smash it through the covers. Then switch off again.
Yeah.
It's not quite like that. It's more of a volume control.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you're at the point of delivery, you're up at 10. You've got your volume up, control up at 10.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you've played the shot, you might turn it right down to say two or three.
Yeah.
At the end of the over, when you're talking to your colleague about tactics and, you know, what's happening and what the bowlers are doing, you might turn it slightly back up again to 5 or 6. You might then, when you're looking around at the field, you might be again up at sort of 5 or 6 to see, you know, to work out where what the areas you can score in and that kind of thing. So your concentration is up a bit, but you're not fully switched all the way up to 10 yet. And then as the bowler starts to run in, you just gradually start turning the dial up as he gets nearer and nearer until you're at 10.
Yeah.
So you're working your way up and down the volume level rather than just going on, off, on, off, on, off. It's not quite as simple as that.
Yeah.
But the chapter on the chapter on concentration explains that in quite a lot of detail. So if you think that could help you and you're struggling with that, because that is quite a common tip, you know, learn how to switch on and off. But you're struggling with that, you don't quite know how that's working for you, then definitely have a look at the way that Pitch Vision Academy shows you how to do it, because that tends to work.
Yeah. Our next question from Daniel asks, am I at a disadvantage? And he says, I didn't really start taking cricket seriously until I was 13 to 14. I'm a left-arm pace bowler, but didn't really start trying to bowl fast until about a year ago. And on top of that, my batting has only really improved over the last year. I don't face fast or extremely fast pace bowlers, but other people my age do in their respective leagues, and I'm always worried about facing extreme pace. Do you think these things would put me at a disadvantage to someone who's been playing seriously since 11 or even under? I'm interested to know, David, when did you start playing cricket?
I was quite a late starter myself. I was around cricket from as young as I can remember, but my club didn't have a section for young players.
Yeah.
So I didn't really play I mean, I played in the garden and all that, but I didn't play competitively until I was 14.
Yeah.
So that's quite, you know, that's relatively old, especially these days. But what I did, probably this is sort of going into my answer as well. But what I did was, I played a lot of other sports. You know, I played, you know, football and, you know, we used to run around and climb trees and throw rocks and, you know, just generally keep active and learn how to move. And that would probably be the start of my answer here, that at the age from, say, 6 upwards, when you've sort of learned how to walk and you've got all the basic motor skills down, then the next thing is movement skills, is learning how to move, learning how to run, learning how to throw, learning how to jump, strike an object, you know, catch an object, all those kind of things. Just general movement skills. At that age, from 6 up to maybe sort of 10, 11, 12, that's all you really need. And you can learn those things, not necessarily, I mean, you can learn those things by playing cricket, of course. But you can learn those things in a myriad of other ways as well, both in formal sports, in football or rugby or, you know, whatever games. Or just informal stuff, like, you know, just going and playing with your mates. So there is a certain disadvantage to not having played from younger for actually playing cricket, because cricket is a game which requires, you know, you have to learn skills. And so, you know, if you start late, then it takes you longer to catch up. So in terms of that, then, you know, you're losing out in that way. But if you, as long as you've been, you know, busy doing other things in the in-between years, it doesn't really matter that much, because if you're a decent athlete, you can turn your hand to any physical skill. So, you know, that's the first thing, to be an athlete first. As long as you're an athlete first, then you can play cricket and pick up the skills of cricket quite easily.
I've heard Andrew Simons was a late starter in cricket.
Yeah.
Because he grew up playing rugby league and soccer, and he just took up cricket late, and yet he's an international player. So it's really about athleticism, just general athleticism in sports. And if you have that, I reckon you'd be all right to start cricket late.
Absolutely.
Well, not too late, but late enough at 14.
Oh, definitely at the ages that we're talking about here. I mean, you could probably start even later, to be honest. Yep. I mean, the later that you start, the harder it becomes, because the younger you are, the easier you find it to pick up new skills. But yeah, you get people who are late developers as well. You know, there's people in this country who perhaps have played club cricket and minor counties cricket for a few years and not really looked like doing much, and then sort of, you know, they got spotted at the right time by the right person, and they're playing professionally. So even within cricket, you can still be a late developer. So there's no reason why you can't pick up the game late and catch up with your peers quickly. I would say that, depending on his ability levels, I can't see him being more than a year behind the average person. And if he's a good player naturally anyway, as many people are, especially many good athletes, then he probably wouldn't be behind at all.
Yeah, that's right. We had a player in our cricket team who used to train really hard. And anytime someone used to ask him why, he'd say, "I'm training hard to catch up with the people who started earlier." So maybe it's just about training better from now on.
Yeah, he might not even need to catch up. But yeah, if he thinks he does need to catch up, then train a bit more, train a bit more often than anybody else, and you'll soon catch up with him.
Yeah, that's right. All right, that's all the questions we have for today. Let's take a recap.
Excellent.
At what we've looked at. We've had a look at avoiding lower back pain as a spinner, and decided that you can avoid lower back pain by spending a lot of time stretching the hip flexors and the muscles around the hips and strengthening the muscles around the hips. For the question of bowling off the wrong foot, well, if it works for you, don't change it,
absolutely,
David says. Or else if you're trying to change your action because it doesn't work, you should give Ian Pond's bowling course in Pitch Vision Academy a go. And you can still bowl fast, although it is harder because biomechanically it's not the right way to do it. And for the question about mental practice drills, we spoke about visualization and the importance of it, and we've spoken about the mental training course in Pitch Vision Academy written by David, and which would be really helpful to increase someone's mental ability to concentrate for long innings, and about the ability to zone in and out to concentrate for a longer period. And for the question of late bloomers and are they at a disadvantage, we spoke about the importance and that it is better if you start earlier, but that as long as you are athletic and you've played other sports and you have existing movement skills, you should be all right. Thanks for listening, guys. If you guys have any questions, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Also, don't forget to check us out at twitter.com/mycoach, M-I-coach. And also, you can subscribe to us through iTunes by searching My Cricket Coach and subscribing. So, from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampat signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.